I'm Helen.
I'm Miss Sinclair.
And I'm Edison.
Y'all better grab your extra large popcorn. We are in the thick of things with great films.
I am open and positive.
I don't like it.
Let's throw on these boxer gloves.
Let's do it.
Let's fucking do it.
Welcome to Talk Movie to Me, a weekly podcast where we feature a new release that's just hit theaters or streaming. I'm Helen.
I'm Edison.
And I'm Miss Sinclair. It's 1977, and late-night talk show Night Owls with Jack Delroy isn't producing the ratings the network and Jack Delroy himself desire. Tired of taking a back seat to the Johnny Carson show, Jack has become weary of grinding his gears trying to make it into the fleeting hearts of the American public. He's tried fake feuds, exotic animals, and jokes galore. He's tried tugging on heartstrings and walking off set, all to entertain and make them laugh. Sweeps Week is around the corner, and Jack has to do something to boost those numbers, and fast. But where do our morals go when we're desperate for adoring eyes? What packs will we make to secure our spot in the ratings rat race? On Halloween night, the show is set to do an occult-themed episode. Psychics, skeptics, and one demonic little girl are sure to capture the attention of the entertainment-hungry world, right? But Jack's secret to success may not be the path he saw himself heading down. What once was dreams of glory, praise, and adoration instead becomes hellish, ghoulish, and filled with bloodshed. Was what we saw that night in 1977 a supernatural phenomenon? A crossing of frequencies? A portal into the unknown? Or was it nothing more than a parlor trick, a sleight of hand, and a bunch of smoke and mirrors? Directed by Cameron and Colin Cairns, Late Night with the Devil asks the question, is it true what they say? Sometimes a deal with the devil is better than no deal at all. Okay, first impressions, Edison.
Okay, so yeah, this film I went into without really any expectation. We hadn't had any plan to do it for the podcast. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, okay, this is a good one to cover. It kind of surprised me overall. But at the beginning, I kind of went in blind. I didn't know how it was going to be filmed or anything like that. And yeah, it sort of opens with this prologue kind of introducing us to Jack, the late night host, and walking us through everything. You know, the ratings situation that you mentioned, the opening, his marriage, his frustration always kind of being the bridesmaid, never the bride, and late night ratings. And then it sets up this like found footage type thing, telling us that what we're about to see is this infamous Halloween special episode of a late night show. And at first I was like, man, this is like a lot of exposition right off the top. But then you see that it really does make sense for the kind of movie that this is. And I got on board. What about you, Helen?
Well, Sinclair and I saw this today at Scotiabank. And we did a little role reversal. I was the late one today.
Helen, you are always the late one.
Wait,
that's not true. I was not late when we saw Immaculate.
Sorry, that was the role reversal, was you being the late one. And
this is what I'm saying.
Helen?
I'm just speaking in terms of last time we went to a movie together and saw Immaculate. Sinclair was late and I was there on time. Anyways, okay, so I'm on my way to Scotiabank. I decided to ride my bike because it was a beautiful day in Toronto and I definitely didn't give myself enough time.
No, she did not.
The movie time was 3:10. Mm-hmm. I walked into the theater at 3:27.
Yes.
Hold on, but wait. You know how I always say Scotiabank only has 10 minutes of trailers?
And why do you always say that, Helen? Is it because you're often late and miss?
Yes, and then when I'm not, I time it because I'm curious. But guess what? I walked in at 3:27 and it was just starting.
Oh. It was just starting, but the showtime was 3:10.
Yeah.
So where in that is 10 minutes of trailers? Scotiabank has actually given ample amount of time.
I know. And you know what I think happened? I think the manager of the Scotiabank Theater listens to Talk Movie to Me podcast.
Maybe. Oh. But I need to say, by the time you arrived, I was almost done my sub.
Well, you still smelled like sub sauce for the whole movie. So
I wanted to text her, like, just follow the scent of a turkey sub and you'll find me.
Anyways, so that was my journey getting there. But I have to say, I actually knew zero about this movie. I had never even heard of it. When you brought it up, Edison, I was like, I don't know what this movie is. I didn't look up anything. And I was like, I'm going to keep it that way. I want to go in completely blind. Mm. And I'm so glad that I didn't miss any of the movie, because the first like 5 minutes is actually super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that would have been really unfortunate, because there's so much content and like exposition in that first little bit that you were speaking to. But I was just really excited. I was like, I'm loving this style already. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what's about to happen. So let's go. Mm-hmm. Buckle up. Sinclair, what was your first impression?
Mm-hmm. Well, I found this pretty gripping from mm-hmm. the start. I kind of like the documentary style opening about this, you know, late night show and this host and this big event that happened. And it did feel very true Hollywood story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I guess this is kind of in the found footage genre, kind of. It's kind definitely of, more
yeah.
like it's like more archival footage, but this didn't feel like I was watching something I've watched a million times
yeah.
before. Like, this actually did feel a bit fresh.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't really have an idea where this movie was going
yeah
at all, so I was kind of excited by that. I didn't know too much about it, and it just felt a little unpredictable, and I was into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, my very first impression was that there were like 900 production companies involved in this,
yeah.
to the point that I myself, and there was like a group of five people behind me, and they were behind me, and everyone was kept laughing because it just kept being like something, something productions.
Yeah.
And with their whole like little theme intro. And then another one, and then another one, and we were like, what is happening?
That kind of blended into when the movie actually started, too. It was hard to actually tell where the movie truly
yes.
began.
Which was cool.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah, yeah, that bought me those extra couple seconds,
yes.
too.
It totally did, yeah.
Let's get into the storytelling.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I had never heard of Cameron and Colin Cairns, who are the writer-director duo for this film. So I looked up a little bit about them, and they are Australian brothers. They have, it looks to me like this is their third feature that they've done together. The two other features were also horror movies. And their inspiration for this movie in particular was, well, partly had to do with the fact that they, you know, they're working with low budgets. So they were like, what's a scenario where we could essentially shoot an entire movie in one location? And they both had been working in directing sitcoms. And
oh, cool.
So they were like in this headspace of like, okay, that frantic, crazy energy of like being in front of a live audience and how kind of stressful and high tension that environment can be. And that sort of fed into this idea for their next feature. So that's part of the inspiration for Late Night with the Devil, which I thought was really cool.
I think that is really cool. I thought, like, kind of to your point, Sinclair, when you said, you know, we haven't really seen it done like this before,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't really know where this film was gonna go. I don't know that I've ever seen a film, at least that I can recall, where the structure of the storytelling is such that you have like a basically like a 5 minute intro, and then you just watch
the episode of the show. Yeah.
And I thought that was a really, really unique and interesting structure, because mm-hmm. it totally changes so many of the beats that we would normally associate with a feature film, but yet they still tried to incorporate it. Like, the pacing worked despite it being different than we're used to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, I'm surprised too that they even did the behind the scenes footage as well, which I actually didn't mind at all. I did find that to be interesting, but I also think it could have worked if they just showed the episode, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking that while I was watching it. I'm sure that this is one that I'll revisit again, like at a cottage in the summer at some point, just mm-hmm. as that type of a watch. And mm-hmm. I would be really curious to watch it, really thinking, okay, could they have cut out every one of those scenes and would it still work? Because we get a lot of info there. We find out that the first psychic guy is dead. Like, there's a lot that sort of is revealed in those moments. But they could have, I don't know, but it's interesting to think about.
Mm. I think my favorite element of the storytelling was not actually knowing if this was actually just for the ratings, if this was put on and was a show and a production, or if he really had made a pact with some sort of demon to have a successful show.
Or if Carmichael's, that whole sequence with Carmichael, the skeptic, like conducting the full hypnosis of the audience, included us as the viewers.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, wait, did we actually see anything here, or have we been hypnotized? Like, it was a little bit of, are we in the Matrix?
Yeah.
As the like viewer.
I loved the vagueness of that. And I did love that you actually feel like the audience, and you don't know if you're being fooled or not by the story as well. Like, are you a skeptic or are you a believer? You can ask yourself that question after you watch this. And I also do love the idea of secret societies and demon worship and all of that, but I'm also a cynic at the same time, and I'm also a skeptic, and I think everything is fake, and I never believe reality television, and everything in Hollywood is intentional. And I like that the movie puts you in that position. You know, are you a skeptic? Are you a believer?
Oh, God, yeah. You're 100% Carmichael the skeptic.
He was my favorite character.
Obviously. I'm 100%
every time
the
he came,
person.
Every time he said something, I was like, yep.
I'm definitely Gus, the like...
The sidekick?
The sidekick who's like, I'm out. This is too real. Bye.
Yeah. But also, you know, maybe the show was a performance. It was meant for ratings. Maybe the idea that this is now a documentary is also pushing a Hollywood agenda as well, and also helping to facilitate the lore around this event that happened. Like, you know, we don't really know where the truth lies.
I think in terms of that, I kind of wish that there was a bit more ambiguity, because when we get to the end, we do sort of see it all happen, right? And we see Lily get like totally possessed by the devil and kind of like kill everybody, and we're assuming kind of take over Jack as well, and then he ends up stabbing Lily. But there was a part of me that was like, okay, I would have liked to still question.
I don't know though, but like, maybe Jack did just have a breakdown and stab her on live television.
Yeah, but then you know? See everybody else with the injuries that occurred from the devil.
But was it the devil, or was it him in the moment? You know, we don't know.
Yeah, true. I guess the only character who it seems like Dave or
see, I'm
like
coming
Jack
in
couldn't...
like Carmichael. Like, this is what's happening.
I think that the ending, so we're sort of jumping way ahead with the story here, but basically, I think the ending is going to be the bit that people are either like, oh, yeah, I love that, or oh, that didn't really work for me. For me, I actually loved it. I felt like the reason why I loved it is because the film made a choice, and once it got there, once it like progressed along and got to that point, it went off the rails, and it did so with like 1,000% commitment and wild abandon. And I was kind of here for that. I was just like, wait a minute, she's conducting electricity, her head has exploded in half, she's a demon. She's like, it was so ludicrous, but wild, that I just thought, okay, I love this. It's like audacious.
And also, you know, maybe he did sacrifice his wife.
Oh, he totally did.
To
the
cult.
That was Jim Bergen.
But that's it. Maybe he did that. And then he's like, hey, nothing actually happened from that. The ratings still shit. And then he just has a breakdown and kills everybody.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know? He's like, fuck, I did all that for what?
In a blaze of glory.
Goes out, well, yeah, blaze of glory.
Should we talk about the Faustian theme in this movie?
Okay, I mean, talking about the idea of like a Faustian bargain. Basically, for anybody who doesn't know, Faust is a famous story about a man named Faust who was very unsatisfied with his life. And he makes a pact with the devil at the crossroads, and he exchanges his soul for unlimited knowledge and unworldly pleasure. this story never gets old, to me at least. I think this works in so many different settings. You know, we've seen this in movies before. We've seen this in movies like Angel Heart and Bedazzled, remake of Bedazzled. It's this idea of, you know, would you sell your soul for what you desire? And this is really a burning Hollywood question. You have to sell your soul, a lot of people think, in Tinseltown to a certain degree. You have to give up a lot of normality. You have to give up your relationships a lot of the times, your morals. And it's heavily implied in this film that that's what Jack does to get the ratings.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because both narratives, the Faustian, the classic like Goethe Faust story, and this film explored this idea too of like hubris and downfall. Mm-hmm. And this arrogance and overconfidence that lead to someone's like crumbling, right? Jack and Faust both believe that they can outsmart fate and control the forces that they've unleashed and made this bargain with. But ultimately they discover, no, ma'am, you can't outsmart the devil. Their hubris blinds them to their like moral implications until it's too late. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Always fun to watch, even though it never really ends up well for the character.
Yeah. So where was this deal? Where did this deal take place, Sinclair?
That's a great question, Helen. So basically at the beginning of the film and throughout the film, it is stated that Jack has a connection with the Grove. The Grove is based off of Bohemian Grove, which is a real society. It was founded in 1872, and it was basically a private gentleman's club, which has members that are the most prominent men from all over the world. So presidents, politicians, Hollywood stars, and they would have these like 2 week long parties and events where artists would come and perform, and it would be this big exclusive event. The locations grew. The club is associated with the big redwood trees that are in California, which this film also references a lot, that, you know, they would
be met
under the tall trees. It suggested that Jack and Dr. June actually met at a Grove event. So you can kind of take that any way you'd like. But basically, like Bohemian Grove, it had always been rumored to have orgies, satanic rituals. Whether that's true or not, we don't know. But the owl was a very prominent mascot of Bohemian Grove. One of the camps was called the Owl's Nest Camp. And obviously in Late Night with the Devil, there's a lot of owl imagery going on. People dressed as owls. The show is called Night Owls. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to think, maybe the secret society is like pulling these strings of the show. How much of an influence have they had on Jack? Have they had on the show? Especially when we get the knowledge that he's been associated with these people. Yeah, I knew about Bohemian Grove because of True Detective season 2. That's what inspired that kind of like those culty parties in season 2 of True Detective.
Such a shame that the rest of that the season was just so terrible.
A lot of people say to give it a second chance, so I don't know.
Yeah, so in relation to that, Late Night with the Devil is also kind of has a commentary on Satanic Panic. So Satanic Panic started in the 80s in the States and then kind of spread globally in the 80s and the 90s. But it actually is cited to have began with a Canadian book called Michelle Remembers, which was written by the Canadian psychiatrist Lawrence Pazder. And it's said to be, you know, a true accounting of his sessions with Michelle Smith, who he later married. A little bit problematic there. But he claims that through hypnosis, he helped her recover memories of being a part of like a satanic cult and having to do all these horrible things when she was a child.
Oh.
And so the book in this movie, The Conversations with the Devil, that Dr. June has written about Lily, seems to be like very similar to that. So I thought that was kind of a cool nod to that whole phenomenon, which came a little bit later than when this movie is set. But I love how the movie in general it really plays into these fears and these pop culture things of the time that were really fascinating. Like even the concept of late night television and, you know, late night hosts and how that was, it was edgy and it was, you know, a little bit, I don't know, dangerous in a sense.
Well, there also was a lot of fake stuff on there. There were like fake feuds. Like if you think of Andy Kaufman, I mean, even more recently, Joaquin Phoenix
doing
the whole, like there was a lot of that as well, where you're like, what is real, what isn't, what's a performance and what's not.
And because it was on late night, you really only had adults, so it would be like, think about the difference between your breakfast morning show and a late night show. Like it would be fun to be one of these hosts because you have the opportunity to really explore all kinds of fun and interesting and unique stuff that's got a little bit more edge.
Okay, question for you.
Yes.
So this film really does let you think about how, like, even with the character of Lily, like, was she possessed or was she being influenced? Was she being led? Because
were you silenced?
Yes. Like, did you ever have hypnotists come to your high school?
Yes, I've been hypnotized.
High school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, we did. We went to a Catholic school.
We had hypnotists, and I remember watching it, and they would just pick people randomly from the crowd, and they would all play into it.
I totally did.
Wait, you played into it, or were you hypnotized?
No, I was absolutely hypnotized.
Okay.
What? I think I was. I don't know.
Can you explain it?
Okay, yeah. Because
describe the experience.
I never was chosen to go up on stage, so I
wouldn't have been able to have been hypnotized, Sinclair.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But Edison, though, I don't know.
Edison could
You would either A, like, actually get hypnotized, or B, like, you would play into it. Like, I can't decide which one you would do more, to be honest.
Well, here's the truth, is I've been hypnotized, like, 4 times.
Oh, come on. Come
no, I have.
On.
Describe it, please.
They would come to school, like, every year, but then also in summer festivals in different towns, I would always try and volunteer to get up and do it, right? And I also can't answer. I don't know the truth of whether I was playing it up or whether I was actually hypnotized. I was still in all experiences present. It wasn't like I had like I was no longer conscious or that I had drifted off and suddenly came to. But I did feel like I was, I don't know, like I was just going along with it and it was just happening. That's what I remember.
Yeah, I mean, but this is the problem, is that it was, you know, in my high school, I was like, it's like the people that get chosen are just a bunch of Edisons. You know, that this is the problem. Like, they need me up there. But so, like, it's funny because even when watching the movie, when the, like, circular spinny thing happens, I was scared.
I was like,
even though it's a movie and I was sitting in the audience, I was still like, I'm not looking at that.
Really?
Yeah.
I was looking at it, I was like, come on.
And I was like, no.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I do love, Sinclair, that there is a small part of you that's like, it's possible that this could be real and I'm just not going to fuck around with it.
Yeah, I don't fuck with it. Even with the eclipse, everyone's like, I want to go watch the eclipse. And I was like, I don't fuck with this guy. Sorry.
The sky in general.
I'm not fucking with this guy.
I can't. Okay, well.
I actually was genuinely scared by this movie.
But you also did the same reaction that you did when you watched Immaculate. So it's like hard for me to tell what you find genuinely
Well, let me explain that. Let me explain the reaction. I don't like jump scares. So if I feel like a jump scare is about to happen, I put my thumbs in my ears and I put my fingers over my eyes.
Yeah.
So she missed half the movie.
Actually. No. But like, there was a moment where, and I can't exactly remember where it was, but when everything goes crazy and then we get, I think, like a fuzzy screen and then we see a very scary face.
Yes.
That terrified me.
Oh, yeah. I screamed.
Yeah. Like, there was moments in this movie that genuinely really scared me. Like when June and Lily first have
The Conjuring.
It's scary.
It was definitely giving The Exorcist, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it is hard to say in that moment that she wasn't possessed, because when you see it, you're like, that's a demon.
That's a demon. Yeah, honey, that's a demon.
That's a demon right there.
That's a demon.
Even the most logical mind can look at that and be like,
That's a demon. That's a demon.
Girl, you're in danger.
You're in danger, girl. Yeah, I think it's interesting because this film is like a unique genre, too, when it comes to storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's not quite a horror, but it's something. And it was
unsettling.
Yeah, it was like scary, but it wasn't scary in the sense that I'm going to be like, ugh. But it also stayed with me a little bit where I was like, because there is still something just we've heard. Again, it's that story of making a deal with the devil that we've just seen so many times. Like, you know that there's got to be some truth to it somewhere, somehow, whatever it is. And, like, it stays. I don't know. I just thought, I don't want to be, I don't, just don't need to meet a demon. No.
Yeah.
No. No.
Okay. Well, why don't we jump into performances? Going to start with our host, Jack Delroy, played by David Desmalchin. I thought he was fantastic. He's been in a ton of things.
Yeah.
Definitely recognize him as always a supporting character who elevates things, just like even Suicide Squad, he's the polka dot man, right? Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely hilarious.
Completely weird.
So weird and just so out there, but like really, really great. And then as like the creepy side helper servant thing in Dune and just so much.
Creepy guy in Prisoners.
Yes.
Very creepy. Mm-hmm.
So to see him playing the lead and carrying the film and playing the opposite of creepy, where he's meant to be like a late night show host, right? Who's someone who is endeared to the entire public.
Charismatic
and warm, all of those things. Yeah. And for him to be able to do it completely, like when he was on as Jack, the host, I believed it completely.
Yeah. Me too. When this movie started and he comes out to do his opening monologue and I was like, oh, I know this actor. I didn't know about him by name, but I know him as being a very like creepy character actor. And he started delivering the opening monologue. I thought to myself, here's an actor.
Yes.
Like he can do this character so convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I know him as being creepy. And then I watch this and I'm like, oh, you've got that. You've got that charisma. You know exactly what you're doing. And I was just so excited to see where he was going to go throughout the rest of the movie because he was like hit the nail on the head right out the gate. It was really cool to see him lead this movie.
But he also, because he plays a lot of creeps, it makes this character interesting because you could also see him having that like sleazy show business side.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, we invited this man into our living rooms every night on television and now we found out this about him and
he sacrificed his wife
he was involved in orgies under those redwood trees and like you believe that
you totally believe it,
you know.
Yeah.
Ian Bliss as Carmichael the Skeptic, the best character for sure for me. I found him to be
irritating.
No, yeah. I found him to contrarian. Be mesmerizing to watch, actually.
Oh, that tracks.
His magic, his, you know, hypnosis. He struck me as like a very convincing con man. He could be a really good con man if he wanted to be. I found him really captivating. I just think he was interesting to watch. He's struck me as one of those actors that if you met in person, they'd probably be really cool. They'd be like a cool hang. And he probably could do magic tricks in real life.
And also probably would have just a ton of fun stories.
Yeah, like he just seemed like that guy.
I agree with that. I thought he was fantastic. I think like really this film is like it's kind of a one-man show, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what a late-night show is. I get it. But you really need all the supporting characters. Gus, I thought, was great. That's Reese Oteri. And just like played the good sidekick, but he was also the voice of reason, you know, when really shit started to hit the fan, when he was trying to move that. What's that instrument called? Whatever. That weird instrument that like you it plays without you having to touch it.
Right.
And it started to play of its own. And he was like, no, this is, we have to go. What you're doing here is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like he gave him the choice and the option to leave, but it was too late. Mm-hmm. But I thought he was really good too.
Yeah.
And the little girl was appropriately creepy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Ingrid Torelli was her name. And she had those creepy eyes.
Yeah, she did.
And way of speaking, her weird, like stunted, stilted way of speaking was really very, very creepy.
Yeah.
So all in all, like, I thought that they were really, all the performances were great, but it was absolutely carried by David Desmalchin. And he was fantastic.
Yeah.
What about technical?
Well, I mean, something really important to note about this movie in terms of technical, there was definitely some controversy.
Mm-hmm.
about some technical choices that were made, which I mean, I had no idea about until after the fact. Mm-hmm. But basically, this film used three images that were AI generated. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this discourse has been kind of a heated topic about AI taking over jobs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Angering a lot of people. So I guess this was discovered, you know, about this movie, and people were mad, and a lot of the Letterboxd reviews were really focused on the fact that this movie used some AI-generated images. I do have a statement here from the directors. They definitely address this. They said, in conjunction with our amazing graphics and production design team, all of whom worked tirelessly to give this film the 70s aesthetic we have always imagined, we experimented with AI for three still images, which we edited further and ultimately appear as very brief interstitials in the film. We feel incredibly fortunate to have had such talented and passionate cast, crew, and producing team go above and beyond to help bring this film to life. We can't wait for everyone to see it for themselves this weekend. So obviously there was a lot of human beings that, you know, the majority were human beings, but it was the fact that they used any at all. I don't know. Their reasoning, was it budget? What, do they have to put the budget somewhere else? Maybe it was a cheap way to make some graphics. I don't know, but
at the end of the day, they were just going to pull a stock photo off Getty Images or something anyway for whatever they needed for this thing. I don't know. I guess I think in this specific context, it was just so extremely minimal, like really give these people a break. Also, this would have been filmed and done and organized way the hell before so much of this was actually happening, certainly before the strikes. But I think it is an important conversation to have about the broader impact.
It's an important broader conversation, but like there's people being like, boycott Late Night with the Devil because they used AI. And I think that's such bullshit. This is a low budget indie movie.
Yeah. We also don't want to boycott an indie movie. Yeah. As well.
What about all of the humans who worked on this film whose actual jobs you're sabotaging by saying that? It's dumb as hell.
Yeah.
You got to find that line between criticism and, you know, support.
It's glad that the conversation is being had, though.
I mean, in terms of like the humans that worked on it, I thought the detail to the 70s aesthetic was amazing.
Same.
Especially the hair. I felt there were certain moments that I was like, wow, that's really good 70s hair.
It was all impeccable. The costuming, the hair, the set design. It was even the way the film looked, like film grain, you know, and the sound. I thought the sound design was really great in this movie. You know, there's after the medium is sitting beside Jack on stage and he starts to subtly cough. And I thought to myself, like, oh, is he becoming the wife? Is he somehow like feeling the effects of the lung cancer? And you just hear these subtle coughs. Like there was moments like that where there's really like subtle sound cues that I was picking up on that I thought were really, really well executed. Even the band, like the live band for the talk show, every time they would, you know, come up and start playing after every commercial break, it all felt really authentic to me. Like I felt like I was on that set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it looked like it. And the framing ratio of the different cameras when they were shooting it, you know, a lot of the time we see that in films and it's like, it just reads as a stylistic choice for the sake of it. And sometimes that's cool. And I don't mind it. But in this film, it was a stylistic choice that actually made sense for the story because it was of when it was set as a TV show in the 70s. That's exactly what it wouldn't be a widescreen shot, you know?
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that too. Yeah, I thought everything about that technical side of it. I even liked the graphics at the end. I thought that, okay, yes, it doesn't look super real, but I think that was intentional. It was playing into the, like, this is a 70s show. It would have been odd if suddenly we had this like hyper real situation. Mm-hmm. Like that also looked old school to me and it worked.
You mean in terms of like practical effects?
And even the special effects, yeah, like the lightning.
Special effects. There was puppetry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about specifically the special effects, like the computer generated effects of the lightning bolt and her head kind of being all flamed. And
that did look very like 70s sci-fi.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, what is the last word on Late Night with the Devil? Helen.
I really enjoyed this movie. I am excited to see what Cameron and Colin Cairns make next. I love a, you know, just contained, low budget, efficient horror movie. Like I'm finding in the last few years, I've really gravitated towards that style of movie. I just really appreciate it. It feels like you can do a lot with not a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like you really can. And that I'm kind of more interested in seeing that than a movie that has like $100 million budget, to be honest. What about you, Sinclair?
Yeah, I thought this was a great watch. Mm-hmm. I thought this was pretty unique. It had a refreshing quality to it.
Yeah.
I had no idea where this was going when I started it. And I really liked that. I had a really great time.
Yeah.
Totally. Same here. I, again, went in without much expectations and it ended up being really fun. It felt original. I thought the performances were great. I thought that the storytelling was totally unique, like we just talked about. It felt nostalgic. Like, yeah. I really think that this film will have sort of legs over time.
Yeah.
I don't see it being a big box office thing. I think it's only made about $10 million so far. I don't think it got like a massive wide release, but it's good. And I would definitely encourage people to go and check it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this has been another episode of Talk Movie to Me. If you would like to get in touch with us, our email is talkmovietome@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram @talkmovietome. Rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And our season 7 episodes are now on YouTube @talkmovietomepodcast. I'm Helen.
I'm Miss Sinclair.
And I'm Edison. Thanks.